Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on RFID, Radio Frequency Identification Tags, right after this. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, surprisingly, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. And everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you when your person houses papers and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, the answer to that is you bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how this information is gathered, how much of it is gathered, what information is stored, what information do you want to keep personal and private. You know, that's what actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. It's knowing privacy issues. How do they get behind your privacy veil? Now, keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, educational. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and ask for yours right now. The number 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the webpage georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, RFID deals with Big Brother. Big Brother. So a little-known federal agency is planning to monitor a program. Now, we talked about that last time. They want to put a transponder in your car. RFID tags and their progress. Well, Walmart wants to put RFID tags, radio frequency tags, on their pallets. They want to put it in their products. Well, what they're not telling is that they're going to put it on the individual product and see whether or not you're stealing it from the store. And then when you take it out of the store, we'll be able to follow that pair of tennis shoes in the same way that we can follow your automobile. The ultimate end of this technology is this. Everything that you bought at the supermarket is going to have a little grain of rice. And you're going to have a little grain of rice, or a little transponder about the size of a grain of rice. And it doesn't require a battery. This RFID tag is read by the device that has the battery. So we're going to take this signal that comes from your hand, your forehead, your tennis shoes, your automobile, and we're going to identify where that's located on planet Earth. That's step one. Then we're going to locate what it is. And then once we know where it is and what it is, then we're going to identify the person who's got it. Then the computer can decide, well, is that person where he or she is supposed to be? Think of that. Now, we do this with prisoners right now, voluntarily. You get arrested, and they say, well, we'll let you go. You wear this ankle bracelet. I don't know why people do that, but they sign these agreements, you know, with the prosecutors. And instead of going through the arraignment, bail setting, and being released, without this, they agree, well, yeah, okay, I'll wear this bracelet. I'll wear this ankle bracelet. You don't have to do that. There's another better procedure, I think. But then, you know, most people, they don't know the law. They know politics, but they don't know the law. Then they don't know anything about their Second Amendment right to be secure in their person, houses, papers, and effects. So they've lost their privacy. And Americans today tell me, well, why are you concerned about this privacy issue if you're not doing anything wrong? If you're obeying all the laws? Well, you know, the people that make these laws can build a legal straitjacket around you if they so desire. Do you think that having that kind of power in the hands of nameless, faceless bureaucrats in Washington, Jefferson City, or Sacramento is good for you? Now, most Americans, I can't speak for all of you people in the world, but most Americans need a guardian. Let's be realistic. Most Americans are no longer capable of managing their own lives, as evidenced by the fact that they cannot manage their money. That's why they have to have a checking account. They can't manage buying and selling. That's why they have to have credit cards. They cannot manage a budget, and they have these credit cards so that they can expand, you know, the amount of money that they spend, because they can't manage the amount of money that they earn. Americans pay interest at the rate of 200 to 500%. We go in to get payday loans and pay 200% interest on this money. Evidently, we're unable to do percentages. We're unable to do our math. And now we're being told that we're going to put transponders in our automobiles. Americans have not complained about technology intruding upon their privacy up to this moment in time with credit cards, banks, Social Security, IRS, income tax, and things like that. That's why I opted out of Social Security, the income tax, and banks. I don't have a checking account. I don't have a bank account. See, I want to maintain my privacy, and I can't be private filing a 1040 form every year. They ask 83 questions on there that are highly intrusive. Now, I'm not opposed to people that want to pay the income tax and participate in Social Security and government welfare programs. I mean, after all, people that can't support and take care of themselves probably need welfare. They probably need Social Security. I mean, I'm not here to criticize people because they can't take care of themselves. And people that can't take care of themselves in their old age need a guardian, and the government is that guardian. Social Security is your guardian. The IRS is your guardian. George Bush is your guardian. I mean, after all, he's protecting you from terrorists. Now, George, you don't need to protect me from any terrorists. I have a guardian angel that takes care of that job for me. As a matter of law, you see, I've got an old covenant contract negotiated by Moses with God out at Mount Sinai. I've got a contract. I'm under contract. I'm under the law. I've had people say, well, you're one of those guys that's under the law. Yeah, that's right. It's against the law for me to practice sodomy, idolatry, adultery, theft, murder, covetousness. It's against the law for me to do those things, and so I'm under the law. But I also have some privacy. Now, that's what we were talking about last time, was this thing of RFID and privacy. Now, the full scope and potential of RFID's benefits won't arrive until widespread adoption occurs in basic projects, helping to lower the cost of RFID technology while setting the stage for further development. And experts are telling us that the initial step toward widespread adoption in the United States is the anticipated success of RFID projects underway at Walmart and the Department of Defense. Okay, so the Department of Defense, government agency, and Walmart in the private sector are pioneering RFID, where RFID is supporting the distribution of products to stores or products on military bases. Now, over the next 18 months, we're going to see the course of RFID adoption, says Brian Higgins. He's the Senior Manager and Director of Global RFID Solutions for Consultants Bearing Point Incorporated. It all depends on Walmart and the Department of Defense. If their projects are smooth, in the next 18 months, there will be a rapid adoption of RFID throughout the retail industry. If their projects tank, it could set RFID back 3 years. All right, so what he's telling is, we're going to have RFID whether you people want it or not, or like it or not. Oh, that's all right. It's all right with me. After all, what that really boils down to is then that I have to take extra steps to guard my own privacy. Now, I'm not going to tell you over the air how to do that, but I teach a school on private business. And one of the basic premises of private business versus public business. See, when you go into Walmart, like Sam's or Walmart, and you buy something, that's public business. If you're going to conduct public business, there's no privacy, nor are you entitled to any privacy there, and the courts have ruled on that many times. When you go out into a public place and they've got a video camera out there that's photographing you, well, okay, that's the breaks of the game. You don't have any right out in a public place to expect. You have no right or expectation of privacy. But there are some legal parameters that protect your expectation to privacy, but it requires that you do something. You've got to take the initial step. Then the courts will protect your right to privacy. Now, if you want to be private, well, then you can't give the information to somebody. So my financial information is private. So when I deal with people, I deal with them privately, and then I don't make paper trails like checks and bank accounts and things like that. And people will sometimes say to me, well, what is it that you've got to hide? And I tell them, I'm hiding my privacy. I'm hiding my privacy. What I do is none of your business, and I'm not going to share that with you or government or business or anybody else. What I do is mine. I got that from God himself. Now, God is the author of privacy, and the concepts that we used in our Declaration of Independence, our Bill of Rights, our Constitution, not just our federal, but our state constitutions, are predicated upon the Ten Commandments, predicated upon the laws of God. Privacy and our Fourth Amendment rights come from God. They don't come from government. Government is here to take them away from you. Business, public business, is here to take your privacy away from you. They want to know all about you. They want to know what you're doing, where you're going, how much you're spending, and they want to tax it. They want to contract with you so that they can take from you taxes. Taxes are predicated upon contract. Social Security is predicated upon contract. It's voluntary. It's something that you do because you want to. It's like getting on an airliner. You know, if you want to surrender your Fourth Amendment rights, you go down to Delta Airlines and you apply for a ticket. Now, that's a public business. It's regulated by government. They have a right to do that, always have. In the past, they didn't make these intrusions on your privacy, but now they do. So I don't fly anymore. So if you want to fly, you cannot be private. You can't have privacy if you're going to fly. Now, isn't that just real special? So people get real mad. Well, I'm going to fly. Well, okay, well, then you're going to surrender your Fourth Amendment right in the process. And I'm not going to surrender my Fourth Amendment rights. And I used to spend $30,000 a year traveling on airlines. $30,000 a year. That's what I used to spend. You know how much I spent last year on airlines? Not a dime. Not a nickel. And until you can repeal, or until you repeal, the Homeland Security and the Patriot Act, I'm not going to fly on another airplane. I'm not going to bend over, spread my cheeks, or submit myself to those Fourth Amendment indignities. I'm not going to surrender my Fourth Amendment rights unless or until the Constitution is suspended. I haven't done that yet. They're getting ready to, though. Day's coming when we'll see that, but it isn't here yet. Well, I got to take a break here, so stand by, and we'll be back with more on this privacy and RFID when we come back. Stand by. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, and we do that 7 days a week. And the sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, the endorsements or recommendations that we give does not necessarily mean that the authors or publications that we recommend or endorse reciprocate and endorse the Law Hour. So most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, or sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans who do not necessarily endorse the opinions and beliefs that we express here on the Law Hour or Editorial Review. So I'm sure that Walmart probably does not endorse our negative comments on RFID technology. Now here's a little story. We were just talking about the airlines here a second ago. So here's a story. It comes from Spiker. And for $100, you can get a fast track permit to board your airplane. You just have to give up your Fourth Amendment rights in the process. So if you're not concerned about privacy and the Fourth Amendment, neither are the airlines. The United States is days away from launching a scheme that would create an elite class of airline traveler entitled to bypass long queues for security checks at American airports. It emerged on yesterday. Now, frequent flyers wishing to join the Registered Traveler Program will pay a one-time fee, understood to be about $100, and undergo extensive background checks in return for a faster journey to their departure gate. Members will carry a card containing biometric data and will probably avoid having to remove coats and shoes, as well being exempt from the pat-down searches that some passengers currently undergo. Wouldn't you like to be a special person like that? One supporter of the scheme, David Stempler of the Air Travelers Association, said that members would even be allowed to use security channels, usually reserved for flight crew and airport employees. A spokeswoman for the Transportation Security Authority, part of the Department of Homeland Security, said that a pilot version would be running by July. An official announcement this week is expected to name Minneapolis, St. Paul Airport in Minnesota is the first location for this trial. We need to get away from treating the traveling public as if all of them are equally liable to have terroristic tendencies and concentrate on folks that we don't know much about. Tim Henderson, Minneapolis, St. Paul's Deputy Director of Operations, said that. Many business travelers relish the idea, according to one poll. Almost three-quarters would be happy to pay $100 to cut the waiting times. Well, think about that. Three-quarters of American businessmen, you know, they've been educated in public school, been educated in college. They're concerned about making money and saving time. They're not interested in privacy. So they're willing to go through a process that the government could not do to them, or you, or me, or anybody else. They have to get your voluntary consent to make these kinds of intrusive inquiries. So the government comes along and they say, okay, we're going to make airline travel so cumbersome, so time-consuming, so intrusive every time you fly that you will be glad to voluntarily surrender your Fourth Amendment rights. And that's what they've done. And it makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? I mean, after all, if we don't do this, then terrorists are going to get on the airliners and blow them up, aren't they? I don't know. It seems like to me the terrorists have won this war, haven't they? I mean, this is the kind of society they have in Iraq and Iran and in the Middle East. Arabs, you know, the Muslims don't have any sense that we Westerners have for privacy, for rights, duties, responsibilities, freedoms. And so they have imposed upon us through their terrorism just exactly what our government wants to impose upon us, tyranny. Governments want the kind of information from its citizens that our Constitution prohibits our government from getting, taking, or acquiring, except from your voluntary permission, or with your voluntary permission. And so, listen to this. Now, they tell us that 3/4 of the people who are using the airlines today would be happy to pay $100. Not only will you give up your Fourth Amendment right, you will pay $100 willingly to surrender that right. So I say, see, your Constitution in the United States and Bill of Rights does not mean anything to most Americans. Not anymore. Now, it was for that Constitution and Bill of Rights, which guarantees your liberties and freedoms, that Americans have fought and died. And that's why these people are ostensibly in Iraq, to fight and die to make America safe for our Bill of Rights, our privacies, etc. That most Americans say, not only don't I care about these freedoms, these privacies, this Fourth Amendment protection, I will pay you $100 to take it away from me. But civil liberties campaigners argue that there will be disadvantages for everyone. Those who do not join could be subjected to more intrusive searches. And that's true. You see, if you will not voluntarily give up your Fourth Amendment right, we will make it even more obnoxious than we've made it in the past, so that you too will gladly give up your Fourth Amendment rights. That's why I haven't been on an airliner for several years. The airlines will all disappear before George Gordon will buy another airline ticket. Now, if every American was like me, the airlines would either, one, all go out of business and there'd be no more airlines, or two, we'd come up with a more intelligent plan, such as the one that they use in Israel. Arm the cockpit crew, then you can't hijack an airplane. But see, that would only cost $5 million, and we want to spend $37 billion a year on Homeland Security. That makes government bigger, more all-encompassing, more intrusive, more powerful. And they take more money from you. They control more of your money. That makes them more powerful. Now, George Bush says he's all in favor of letting you people have your money and smaller, less intrusive government. George Bush has created the biggest bureaucracy in the history of America. Seems to me that the Messiah said, you will know them by their fruits, not by their much speaking. Didn't he? We're not convinced that the information will remain restricted. It won't. You can rest assured of that. The history of mission creep in the U.S. is long and sordid, said Barry Steinhardt, the director of Technology and Liberty Program at the American Civil Liberties Union. Now, you can forget about civil liberties unless you yourself want to protect your own privacy and your own civil liberties, which you can still do. As long as your Constitution is in force and effect, you can do that. But these are choices that you have to make. Getting back to RFID. In the meantime, however, the early RFID projects are making headway in the United Kingdom, where grocer Tesco is testing its ability to track individual items mounted with RFID tags to better control stock levels in department store. Marks and Spencer is testing RFID to track warehouse totes and individual apparel items. Tesco is piloting a system from Stamford, Connecticut-based Mead Westavco Corporation that places tags on individual items and readers on selling floor shelves and in backroom storage areas. The system is designed to let store managers see real-time updates of which products are shelved at less than full capacity and what replacement inventory is available in the store's warehouse. Experts say this can address one of the most common problems facing retailers. A fundamental issue in the retail world is backroom front room visibility. In other words, it's inventory control. A retailer can get good distribution perspective throughout the supply chain until products arrive at stores. But that can all go to waste if supplies sitting in back rooms don't make it out to retail shelves in time to serve customers. If you can't compare front room inventory with back room inventory, it doesn't do much good, Higgins says. Well, somebody has to do it manually. Of course, that creates employment. That puts more people out there on the floor, and we want to eliminate jobs as rapidly as we possibly can. And we're doing that, and we do it through technology. Technology is fine. I don't mind the store doing that. I just don't want them keeping track of the tennis shoes after I buy them and walk out on the street, and that's what's coming next. You can rest assured of that. Now, here again, if everybody in America was like me, which we're not, I mean, there's just a handful of people like me, you know, lunatic fringers. But if everybody was like me, we would have total freedom. The Fourth Amendment would reign supreme, and stores would have to toe the line, because if they didn't, we wouldn't shop there anymore, and they'd go out of business. Airlines would have to deal with terrorism more intelligently. The government wouldn't be able to implement these humongous bureaucracies like Homeland Securities or Homeland Security and the Patriot Act to infringe upon our rights, and the FBI would have to get back in their box. And the CIA could not spy on Americans. But, you know, Americans aren't concerned about that. They're concerned about security and safety. That's what Hitler did. See, he made the German people fearful, and then he said, well, I'm the guy that's going to protect you from your enemies. So just give me the power to do that, and the people did, and that's what Americans are doing. George Bush is, in effect, saying to you, you're in danger, and I can protect you. Just give me the power to do that. And we are, and we will. So as a nation, America's freedoms are going the way of Germans' freedoms in the 1930s. I mean, you can kiss that goodbye. Your Bill of Rights is just about a done deal. But it's not because the government's taken it away from you. You people are giving your rights away and paying $100 to have it done. That makes you the proximate cause of your own injury. And when these rights are finally taken away from you, these are what we call your God-given inalienable rights. You say, don't get mad at God. Don't get mad at the government. Don't get mad at Bank of America. You want to place the blame where it belongs, and it belongs with you, the buying public. It belongs to you, the people that support Walmart in their RFID program. It belongs to you. The fault is with you, the buying public, who pays $100 and then gives all of this information to Delta Airlines. They can't compel you to do that. You don't have to ride on the airliner, but you want to. And they have made riding on the airplane so convenient. So necessary, so desirable, that you're willing to give up your constitutional rights in order to maintain what you believe is that safety and security and all of the good things that you associate with airline travel, or the convenience and the good prices that you get at Walmart. But, you know, again, I'm not here to get in the way of your happiness and success or to get you to follow my modus operandi. I'm just here to report to you, and you can take your own temperature, your own pulse, and decide for yourself how you want to react or how you want to deal with RFID at Walmart or with airline security at the airport. There's a way to do that, and we'll talk more about that when we come back right after this break. So stand by, and I'll be right back. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. The federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information from you, and what are their sources, and how is it stored, and how is it retrieved, and what do they want it for? It's knowing how this information is gathered, and what information is stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. For more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and ask for my free general law CD package, and let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be, just as personal as private and private as the FBI and the CIA. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. Or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine, send me an email request. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, so popular has this RFID been that indeed, Walmart's plans for RFID is cooperation from its suppliers, and perhaps no one, or to no one's real surprise, this retail giant has already elicited more support than it has demanded. Although it has ordered its top 100 suppliers to support an RFID supply chain by January 2005, with RFID tags on pallets and cases, 128 suppliers, the top 100 plus 28 smaller ones, are already moving ahead with RFID projects. Some have signed on enthusiastically because they expect immediate benefits to their own operations. There are very few technology breakthroughs that I've come across that I consider as important as RFID, said Birdseye Foods Incorporated President and CEO Dennis Mullen. We're not doing this because Walmart said so. We're doing this because long-term it facilitates a win-win for the consumer, the retailer, and the supplier. Mullen says it's been, or he's seen enough of how the technology works to determine that it will significantly increase the ability of Birdseye and retailers to get the right products to the right stores in time to sell at the best price. Now, although suppliers will bear the cost of installing the tags, Walmart has set up an organized system providing them support within the retailer's executive and technology ranks. And it helps to promote RFID projects with its suppliers by dedicating support teams of Walmart executives and RFID technology specialists for each participating supplier. They're really trying hard to make RFID happen, so they're collaborating on all levels with us, says Mike O'Shea, Director of Corporate Auto ID RFID Strategies and Technology for consumer products maker Kimberly-Clark Corporation. By sharing information on RFID, these projects among its suppliers, Walmart is learning how to benefit from RFID in ways that minimize the impact on network infrastructure. The biggest ideas that we've shared is how to approach this in a simple way that allows us to benefit from this technology without having to re-engineer back-end systems and applications such as inventory management. And so from their pilots, they are learning how to invade your privacy. Now, this will be, no, probably 2 or 3 years into the future before we get government tracking our tennis shoes. But here's my point. When God told us that he was going to give us this RFID, yeah, that's right, in Revelation 13, 16, 17, 18, he told us about a time when there would be no privacy, when we would live in a totalitarian world dictatorship, which is going to take our freedom from us, just like it did with Daniel. Now, of course, God always protects his own. He took care of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He'll take care of his boys, the people under the contract. Now, the rest of the people out there are going to be the proximate cause of their own injury. And it would seem like to me, it makes all the sense in the world for us to pay close attention to God and Bible prophecy, because you can't prepare for something that you don't know exists. You can't prepare for something that you don't know how. And you can't prepare for something that you haven't been warned about. So God is in the process of telling you, here's how it works, here's why it works that way, and here's who's going to do it to you. So get ready for it. Kind of reminds me of the 10 virgins. You know, there's a parable there in the Gospels about 10 virgins, and 5 of these virgins have collected their oil. And when the bridegroom comes, whatever this event is, these 5 have their oil, trim their lamps, and they're ready for the event. 5 of them are not prepared. And so they come to the 5 that are. And they say, well, give us some of your oil. Now, the 5 that have their oil say, well, you know, if we did that, there wouldn't be enough for you, and there wouldn't be enough for us. No sense 10 of us failing because 5 of us failed to prepare for it, because 5 of us didn't know what to prepare for, because 5 of us weren't wise. Better for us to practice triage. Those that have the oil have enough to survive, and those that don't are going to die, and there isn't any point in all of us dying. So why don't you 5 go die quietly? And then we'll take what action we need to take because we're prepared for it. Now, that's my take on it. I pointed out that, of course, the preterists, they don't take that view. Their view is that all of this has already transpired and we don't need to be concerned about it. It's kind of like getting ready for a hurricane. You know, if all the hurricanes have already occurred, then we don't need to be worrying about any future hurricanes, do we? If I was living in Florida and I was going to build a house, I would build that house to withstand 150 or 60 mile an hour winds, category 5. There are buildings that are designed that way, that are built that way, and when the hurricanes come, it doesn't blow them down, blows everybody else's down. Now, I'm surprised that buildings in Florida, Louisiana, and up and down the coast, the Atlantic coast, aren't built that way, but they're not. And these people, when they go out and build these houses along the Atlantic coast or along the Gulf coast, they put them up on pilings, and then the storms come and blow them down. And then they rebuild them there, and the storms come and blow them down. Now, I marvel, you know. I guess evidently they're getting low-cost government loans or something. They must be subsidized, because anybody with common sense would say, well, if I'm going to build a house. And the last time we had a 15-foot storm surge. I got to tell you about these floods up in Humboldt County. Old Frank Rocha, this is back in the days when we used to practice free market. See, before the government got involved in solving everybody's problems for them, the people were sovereign and the people had to take care of themselves. And then after we took care of ourselves, then we took care of our government. Today, we take care of our government and our government takes care of us so that we don't have to take care of ourselves. And so we always expect government to solve our problems for us. And I guess they're doing that. Your house gets blown down, the government comes in with FEMA and loans you money and puts you back together. But in the old days, this is what old Frank told me. He said, in the old days when a flood came, if your house got swept away in the flood, that would send you a clue that you ought to build your house a little higher. So I lived over at the LaFranchi place, and we were on some natural high ground, and the highest flood that had ever occurred, which was back in 1937, there was one in 07, one in 37, then one came in 55. The highest flood that had ever occurred had not gotten into the house. And then, of course, on down the valley where it got lower and lower down toward the jetty, those people used to haul dirt in and build their buildings and their houses and their barns up on big piles of dirt. Well, 1955 came along, and LaFranchi got water in his house for the first time. There was about 2 feet. 1964 came along, and water got in the house again. This time it was about 4 feet. Well, old Frank Mill, he's an old-timey guy, and he remembered 37 and 55, and he said, well, you'll never have a flood that'll get this deep again. Well, the floods had been getting progressively deeper because over the years, as we cut off more of the forests, we had less and less of the absorptive capacity back in the mountains to absorb. So in 1907, 1937, these floods are getting deeper and deeper. 55, it's getting deeper and deeper. And he said, well, that'll never happen again. You know, looking back at 07, 37, and 55, 55 is the deepest, so we'll never have that happen again. Wait a minute. 64 was 2 feet deeper than 37. Frank Mill's cows, all of them were swept away. Now, there was a guy by the name of Bob Lauffer. I always remember old Bob. He was from England. We used to call him Bobby. And his wife's name was Louise, and she used to drive his car all the time. So, you know, Bobby's sitting over in the passenger seat, and Louie's driving. That's kind of the odd couple, you know. But old Bob, he looked at the 55 flood, and he was out at Pleasant Point. And, of course, he was up on high ground. Well, when he moved over to Lolita, he was moving down on low ground. So he came around. He's real concerned about the flood in 1955, and real concerned about a potential flood in the future, and he wanted to know what the high water mark was, so we showed him the high water marks, and he went over to Bob Mills, or Frank Mills, and he looked at the high water marks, and so he went down to his place, or he'd moved over there from Pleasant Point, and he measured the high water mark, and old Bob started hauling in dirt. And this went on for years. Old Bob was hauling dirt, and he's putting in dirt, and he pulled a great big corral down there. I mean, this thing was sitting up in the air. It was almost like building, you know, the Tower of Babylon. Well, in 64, when the flood came, old Bob put his cows up on his big mound of dirt, and the water didn't even get up close to the top. It was 6 feet from the top of the mound of dirt where he had his cows, and well, the other guys were having their cows swept away and were being wiped out. And while we were struggling through an extra 2 feet of water in our buildings, even on the high ground, kind of reminded me of the 10 virgins and old Bob down there, the Englishman, that nervous Nelly, who was hauling dirt for years. I mean, old Bob was hauling dirt and hauling dirt and hauling dirt. Whenever old Bob wasn't doing anything, he was down hauling dirt and putting it up on his pile. Everybody laughed at him, made fun of him, just like people do today, you know. They laughed and made fun of Noah, laughed and made fun of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel. You know, people have been laughing and mocking and making sport until even the Apostle Peter, through God himself, said, in the end times will come scoffers, mocking, chortling, and laughing at those that haul dirt. Well, mull it over a little bit and think about it. We got to take another break here. We'll be back. We're talking about RFID, Big Brother, and government intrusion into your privacy. Hang on. All right, we're back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. But they should. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, now here's another little story. I just keep building one little story upon another over here. Lawmakers consider smart driver's licenses. Now, my gosh, everybody's got a driver's license, don't they? I've avoided that since about 1976. But, you know, most people have driver's licenses, but they're just ordinary. Listen to this. We're going to now get smart driver's licenses. We don't want any more of those dumb driver's licenses. We've got to have a smart one. A controversial technology already planned for tracking consumer products could be used to create smart driver's licenses that emit signals readable from a distance, according to federal and state government officials contemplating ways to fight identity fraud. Notice that they're readable from a distance. Now, the RFID technology, where we're just measuring the quantity on a pallet, you know, that's just a few inches. Well, I told you, you know, it won't be long until a few inches is a few feet, and then a few feet, you know. Once that camel gets his nose in the tent, well, and he wants to put in his head, and then pretty soon his neck, and pretty soon he wants to move into the tent, and if the tent isn't big enough for both of you, well, then you got to get out. Now, these are readable from a distance. I wonder if the highway patrolman can read your driver's license in your back pocket or in your purse following you down the highway. I wonder if we could read your driver's license from a satellite orbiting overhead. Have you thought about that? Well, the answer to that is yeah, we can do that. It isn't being implemented yet, but we've got the technology for it. And radio frequency identification, RFID, could help thwart terrorists who use falsified documents to get around, say Virginia lawmakers, who will hear testimony on the technology's uses and reports. Now listen. Remember what I told you. It's going to make all the sense in the world. Terrorists can steal your identification. Thieves can steal your personal ID and run up your credit card bills and all kinds of things like that. Well, you can't do it to George Gordon because I don't have any credit. I was in a store one time and a guy asked me, you know, if I had a credit card, and I said, no. And he said, why not? And I said, because I'm a deadbeat. He was just shocked. The idea that people would actually pay for what they buy when they buy it is so revolutionary here in America that if you don't have credit, you've got to be a terrorist. And so the terrorists have to have credit so that they can buy, sell, and trade. And of course, you got thieves in the mix. And of course, thieves and terrorists working to steal your idea. Can you see how logical this is becoming? I tell you, boys and girls, when it comes time for you to go down and get your chip in your right hand or in your forehead, you will be lined up like Americans trying to get the flu vaccine. Now, if you were trying to give me a flu shot, I'd be kicking and screaming and bending and breaking your needles. Boy, I don't care about the rest of you people getting that flu vaccine, but boy, I don't want it. Don't get that stuff around me. There's a limit to how much snake venom and monkey pus, you know, the human body can absorb. And I don't want any of it in me. Now, I'm not opposed to you other people going out and doing that. So if you want to go do it, get right after it. And it's logical, isn't it? I mean, after all, you people eat pig and shellfish, and you got weak immune systems, and you get sick. And then when you get sick, you die. So you need to have this immunity to these diseases. And so medical science comes along and says, that's all right, go ahead and eat whatever makes you feel good. If it tastes good, eat it. And then if you get sick, you come on down here to Mercy Medical Center, And Marcus Welby, M.D. That's what he used to be back when I was a kid. Marcus Welby, M.D. Oh, Father knows best. He'll give you a shot of some form of snake venom and monkey pus and take all that pain and suffering away. So you can sin. You can go out and break the law, and you can get away with it. That's what they're telling you. It's kind of a dry run, you know, as World Net Daily reported. Johnson & Johnson executive recently told industry leaders that in the future the RFID chips will be on everything from diapers to surgical instruments. Even you surgeons in the hospitals will have a chip on your instrument. We'll follow the instrumentation that you used. We'll be able to determine malpractice, whether you followed all the guidelines or not, by simply going back over the operation to see whether or not you violated any of the protocols. God, won't that be handy? Malpractice suits, you know, will just kind of get, you know, it'd be just like parking a car, you know, just automatic. We'll know about it. We'll keep a record of it. It'll be easy. On the driver's licenses, the computer chips would emit a radio signal bearing the holder's unique personal information. Virginia is considering adding biometric data such as fingerprints and retinal scans to the RFID tags. But privacy advocates, oh my God, who are these lunatic fringes come around here? Privacy advocates, for crying out loud. They fear government. Well, what do they have to fear but fear itself? They haven't got anything to hide. Why should they fear government? But these privacy advocates fear government could use this technology to spy on citizens. And they believe it could make identity theft even more complicated. Identity theft even more complicated. Gee, I wonder if people might kidnap someone, kill them, and then steal their little identity chip, and then stick that identity chip into their own hand and then go in and steal people's identity that way. Maybe that's why God said you'd have to have one in your forehead and one in your hand, so there'd be a double check, you know, double identifier there. I don't know. Well, government agents could, for example, easily identify large numbers of protesters in a march. And crooks could mine personal information from the wallets of passersbys on the street corner. Huh. You mean there might be crooks that would be mining this information because they've got receivers? Oh, if you got an RFID tag, then you must have an RFID receiver. A reader. Oh, yeah. A government also could track the movement of its citizens by coupling global positioning data related to satellites with information from card readers that translate or transmit the signals. Advocates of the technology insist, however, that the fears are exaggerated. So don't be fearful now, boys and girls. George Gordon is exaggerating here. See, I'm an exaggerator. So putting a chip or a biometric data on a driver's license doesn't change one iota of the rules under which that information can be used, said Robert D. Adkinson. He's the vice president at the Progressive Policy Institute, according to Wired. Well, listen, if you voluntarily give the information, our Supreme Court has said to us numerous times, boys and girls, there is no right or expectation to privacy if the information is given voluntarily. Information that could not be used against you, information that could not be taken without your consent or permission, once you give the consent or permission, can be used any way they want to. For instance, years ago, I gave my Social Security information to the Social Security Administration. I went down and got my number and my card, like everybody else does. Now, that information belongs to Social Security, and they can use that information any way they deem proper or fit forever. Now, about 1978, I rescinded my Social Security, and I revoked the power of attorney. from 1978 to today, I haven't given any more information to Social Security. Between 1978 and today, I haven't given them any more information. Or from 1984 or some date, I forgot exactly. I think they do have some additional information from Circle K, but let's pick another date. 1984, I haven't used it since then positively. So from 84 till today, that's 20 years, they don't have any updates. Now that piece of information is private, isn't it? And it's private because I kept it private, not because I gave the number to some employer or to somebody else. I kept it private myself. That's why I mentioned to you in my business school, if you want to keep this information private, you can do that. But the government, on average, that's just the average citizen, they're keeping 15 files. That's just the federal government keeps on average 15 files. Now, just what in the hell does the government want with 15 files on you, partner? What are they doing with all that information? Well, you went in and you gave it to them. You know, the military, they got a file on that, and then for welfare, and they got a file for that, and IRS, they got a file for that, and Social Security, they got a file for that. You know, pretty soon, you just keep putting all these files and all this information in here, driver's license and birth certificates and marriage licenses, and pretty soon the government knows more about you than you know about yourself. Which, for the average American, doesn't bother. It's kind of like a kid that's 3 years old, doesn't care how much his daddy knows about him. And then parents begin to wonder, well, what is it about children when they get to be about 12 years old that they go through these teen years? Well, what these teen years are, these people are starting to grow up and wake up to the fact that they've got their own bodies. They've got their own lives. And they want some privacy. And of course, parents are still seeing their children when they get to be 12, 14, 16 years old as if they're still 4, 5, and 6 years old or 3 years old and need their panties changed. And these teenagers, you know, are starting to grow up. And so they want some privacy. They need a little security. Then they go to public school, and the public school teaches them all of these bad things about the Constitution and Bill of Rights, and they're archaic and old, and they're just for a bunch of old fogies, and they don't fit into modern technology. And you know that's true, boys and girls. Our Bill of Rights and our Constitution do not fit in to modern technology. So either freedom and rights have to prevail over modern technology, or modern technology will prevail over your rights, privileges, and immunities. I mean, the choice is yours. I mean, you're the one that goes down and gives the information. Nobody's following you around with a clipboard, finding out what you do. They just ask you and you tell them. And two-thirds of Americans, or three-fourths of Americans, will pay $100 to have their Fourth Amendment rights subverted by the airlines. Gee, maybe the state of Virginia will subvert your rights free. That's a bargain, isn't it? All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. That's it. I'm out of time. See you back here next time. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.